Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, July 31st, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with this article. It's under the banner of City of Monticello. And the headline reads, Business District Testimony. Testimony both for and against regarding establishment of a sales tax-supported business district was given to the Monticello City Council at a public hearing July 22nd. If approved, consultants estimate an added 1% sales tax would generate about $400,000 annually for building, infrastructure, and other improvements within the district, which includes the downtown retail area. I get feedback from people who stay at the Zibel House and routinely tell me that they could choose to stay in Champaign, they could choose to stay in Decatur, they could choose to stay a lot of other places, but they chose Monticello because they love the charm of the small town, said business owner Samantha Kuhn. For that reason, she feels a funding mechanism is needed to address the needs of historic downtown structures, some of which date back a century or more. It's of value to me as a business owner, and it's valuable as tourists to our town, she added, of keeping the quaint feel of the downtown square. Michelle Murphy, the owner of Fieldhouse 219, agreed that there are buildings that need improvements, but that her all-inclusive pricing structure means that added sales tax will cut into her profits. The inclusive model means that menu prices include all taxes. On a $3 tab, she said, with the proposed increase, I would go from making $2.79 to making $2.76, and going from collecting 21 cents to collecting 24 to send back to the government. So, no, the tax isn't always passed on to the consumer. I've always been supportive of the City of Monticello, the City Council, the County Board, and Main Street organizations, but this is one move I cannot get behind, added Murphy. Monticello Main Street Director Stephanie McLeese said her Board of Directors has not taken an official stance, but said something is needed to help upgrade the old buildings. Quaint and charming can slide into old and dilapidated quickly, she said. Local florist Pam Ashcroft countered the added tax comes at a bad time, considering all the increases that came out of the most recent session of the Illinois General Assembly. The state tax on gas has increased 18 cents per gallon. This tax hike is being passed on to merchants who ultimately must pass this increase on to their customers for goods and services, said Ashcroft, the owner of Cabbage Rose Floral Market. She also noted that credit card fees range from 2.75 to 4% of each sale. Tariffs are rising, and that brick-and-mortar outlets already have difficulty competing with online retailers. There's no doubt our buildings are crumbling. They are in need of help and repair, she added. But to section off a small group of businesses, I don't think that's the right thing to do, and I think the economy in the state is, at best, shaky. As currently proposed, the district would encompass 190 parcels, last up to 23 years, and be able to fund not only building renovations but infrastructure work and possibly new construction. It would result in a sales tax rate of 8.25% for the business district area. The price on groceries, medicine, and new vehicles would not be affected as they're not eligible for the tax. Money generated in the business district must be spent within its boundaries. In general, the business district area takes in parcels of property from North Railroad Street East to Buchanan Street, along Bridge Street / West Center Street, and parcels along Illinois 105 from East High Street South to West Marion Street, including blocks of parcels between Park and Buchanan Streets. It calls for monies to be dedicated to streetscape improvements, facade improvements, water, sewer, stormwater work, helping restore historic buildings, helping knock down buildings that may need to be demolished, said Keith Moran, a consultant helping the city with the proposal. But audience member Steve Schreffler did not feel it would help the business climate in town. Anything we can do to buy local is a good thing, and I don't know where the idea of having a higher sales tax is going to be a draw to Monticello, he told the council. I suggest we cut spending if it's really a concern, instead of forcing your will on the people and raising taxes. The city council is scheduled to consider a vote on establishing the business district at its August 12th meeting. And on the front page, we have this article. It's under the banner of Bement Schools. And the headline reads, Second Chance Offered to Local Teacher. Instructor and coach pled guilty to arson in 2010. Bement's new physical education instructor was not sure she would ever teach again after reaching a low point in 2010 that included an arson conviction in Champaign. I lost everything, Monica Hall told the Bement School Board Wednesday night prior to seeing her hiring officially approved. Among the things she lost nearly a decade ago was her teacher's license. She was also homeless for several months. What she found was that her heart had always been in teaching, something Hall had done before becoming the first female firefighter in Champaign, which followed the first round of her educational career. I found being a teacher is where my heart is, she said in a 10-minute address to the Bement School Board on July 24th. Hall decided to apply for recertification with the Illinois State Board of Education. That came to fruition last summer. Noting her transparency as well as teaching ability, the board unanimously approved her hire. Hall of Cisco was 50 when arrested for the August 2009 arson of her own truck and another belonging to a co-worker at the department's main station at 307 South Randolph Street. She told Champaign police she did so because she was behind on payments and needed the money. Court records show she successfully completed her sentence, 119 days of weekends in jail, 4 years of probation, and restitution of $28,575. Hall said last week she was anxious to get back into teaching. She was forthright about the 2010 conviction, saying she ended up in a situation where I made a horrible decision. She added that concern shown by some parents about her hire is one reason she wants to work in Bement. You know, this is one of the reasons I think that this is a good place to be, because you want your parents to be concerned, you want them to raise questions, she told the board. Bement Superintendent Sheila Greenwood said Hall was very upfront about her past and that school boards were made aware of her conviction before Wednesday. Her references were outstanding, and in her previous teaching and coaching experience speaks for itself, the superintendent said. She's going to be a really good addition to our staff. Hall spent the 2017 and 18 season as a volunteer assistant coach with Monticello's girls basketball program and last season as a paid assistant. She was the program's head coach from 1994 to 2003, compiling a 157-100 record and capturing regional and sectional titles in 1998 and 99. Greenwood said Hall has not been hired as a coach and assistant in addition to her classroom duties, but said that could be considered in the future. State law does not allow teaching licenses to be awarded to those convicted of certain felonies, but arson is not on the list, which includes sex offenses and some narcotics convictions. Hall worked for the fire department a total of 9 years in two different stretches. She paid the restitution when she pleaded guilty in April 2010 to intentionally setting fire to only one of the vehicles before she was sentenced. The second count of arson and another obstructing justice were dismissed in return for her plea. The restitution also covered a vehicle that she admitted she set fire to in 2005 in Altamont, again because she was behind on payments. She was never charged with a crime for that, but it wasn't known until she admitted it to Champaign police in 2009. Part of the plea agreement was that she would not be charged in that case. In addressing the school board Wednesday, Hall said the experience taught her that when pushed to a breaking point, there is no shame in calling on others. Do not be afraid to ask for help, Hall said. It's not a sign of weakness. And on page A2, we have this article. It's under the banner of Mental Health Center. The headline reads, Drug-Free Grant Coordinator Digging In. There is supervision, planning, and plenty of paperwork that comes with Carrie Sealander's job as Piatt County Mental Health Center's Drug-Free Communities Director, a job she took over in the spring. But making herself obsolete is one of her main goals, whether that is 4 years from now when the grant runs out, or further down the road if the grant is renewed. When I'm gone, I would like this to continue. This needs to continue. Our youth deserve that. They deserve the support. We need to continue to show them that prevention works, said Sealander of the program that aims to reduce youth drug and alcohol use. Just a few months into the job, she has already learned there is a passionate core of volunteers that would make up the Impact Coalition, which assists her in her duties. I enjoy working with people who really want to make a change, said Sealander. Also of invaluable use are teens who also have the same goals in the coalition. I have never been in a situation where youth members have just been so eager to do such good work, and it's so meaningful. It's very inspiring, she added. Sealander grew up in California and Tennessee, earning her degree in recreational and leisure studies, with an emphasis on therapeutic recreation from the University of Tennessee in 2013. Since that time, she has worked as a therapist for several agencies, including the Savannah Mission Bible Training Center in Georgia. She moved to Champaign in 2018 to spend more time with several family members who live there and had been working at Rosecrans prior to being hired by the Mental Health Center. Piatt County Mental Health Director Tony Kirkman is confident Sealander is up to her next challenge. We are very blessed to have Carrie as part of the team. Her knowledge, passion, and engaging personality has been and will continue to be a huge asset in advancing the mission of the Impact Coalition, said Kirkman. And this section is under the heading of First-Hand Knowledge. Sealander has first-hand knowledge of addiction, terming herself a person in long-time recovery from opiate issues. But she sees that as just another life lesson in which to help people. I can tell youth and family members, I get it, she said. I look at what I've been through, and I'm grateful what I've been through and for what I've been through and for being the person that I am today. But I look at all of that and think if there is a way to prevent youth from ever entering into all the pain, for causing pain to their family and loved ones, to any of that, then I'd like to be a part of that. It's a very motivating source for me. As for goals for the Drug-Free Community Grant and Impact Coalition, one of the first tasks is to reduce the perception that alcohol and marijuana use is cool. By September 2020, we're hoping to decrease the perception that alcohol and marijuana use is okay by 2%, said Sealander. She's also a big believer in activity therapy, which takes education outside of traditional lecture-oriented offerings. You're being poured into all kinds of information. You're sitting in groups sometimes 10 hours a day. So what can we do that's active to really start practicing what you learn? I have found in my own life that practice of the knowledge can be very helpful, said the director. So there's some activity to challenge them, she added. The Impact Coalition will be present at upcoming events, including the Kirby Health Fair on August 1st and Monticello-bration September 21st. To reach Sealander, call 217-762-5371. Now, turning to page A3 under the banner of Piatt County, we have this article headlined, Whiteheath Rec Project Gets ZBA Nod. In the near term, shoring up safety around the Whiteheath baseball field is a main emphasis as Sangamon Township looks to purchase 11 acres surrounding the current park. In the long term, Adding another ball diamond is being considered as the White Heath Recreation Ball Program continues to gain steam. Fayette County Zoning Board of Appeals members were sympathetic to both causes on July 25th, unanimously approving a rezoning of two parcels the township would like to purchase. Located on the edge of town, Township Trustee Mike Nolan said they have a life-saving issue with the parking located near the road. Kids are running in and out of cars and that kind of thing. This would get parking off the main road and into a different area, he added, of the park expansion proposal that would occur after procuring the extra land. ZBA Chairman Lloyd Wax noted he has attended many games at the Diamond and knows firsthand how dangerous it can be. I'm kind of amazed that someone doesn't get hurt almost every time I'm there, he said. Board members voted 4-0 at their July 25th meeting to approve rezoning of two parcels, each bordering the ball field's outfield fences, from A1 agricultural to general business zoning, which allows for parks. A 4.64-acre piece owned by Christina Pontius would end up housing a parking lot for up to 100 vehicles. The second, a 6.5-acre parcel owned by Richard Pontius and Nancy Moser, could house a second, larger field in the future. About 2 acres would be left over for future development. The rezoning now goes before the county board on August 14th. This portion is now under the heading of the project. A grant from the Robert Milligan Trust will pay for about half of the approximately $110,000 the township will need to purchase the 11 acres. Balances in the Township Parks Fund will take care of another $40,000 or so, leaving the township with only $10,000 to $15,000 to make up. Figures show the need for a second field. White Heath Recreation Secretary Aaron Brown said participation has grown from 60 to 183 participants in 6 years. The field is booked 7 days a week from about the 1st of April through the 1st of July, he said. At that point, the Monticello Middle School boys baseball team takes over with August practices and games into the fall. With practices typically limited to 90 minutes each, the thing we're looking forward to is having capacity so people don't have to practice so late and don't have to limit to an hour and a half, added Brown. The new field will also allow for older participants. Brown said the current fences of 274 feet to the left, 267 to center, and 264 feet in to right field will accommodate up through middle school athletics. The new field would also have high school appropriate lengths. Sangamon Township Supervisor Kathleen Pyatt said the current field is known for far and wide for its ability to drain rapidly. It's a wonderful field. People and teams really enjoy playing on it, she said. Pyatt also said the landowners have worked well with the township to make parcels available that will best suit the park's needs. She hopes the township can officially take ownership of the land in September. The goal is to do something for the community, she added. And under the heading of other zoning business, we have this. The ZBA also approved a variation for Peter and Mackenzie Klein that would allow them to separate a 3.04-acre piece of the 40-acre parcel of agriculturally zoned land near Cisco. They plan to construct a single-family residence. County code requires at least 20 acres for new homes, but has been finding that homeowners have difficulty obtaining loans for home construction on that large of a site. In this case, the applicants have enough acreage to meet county code, but have been told loans will be difficult to obtain unless the parcel is smaller. For that reason, the ZBA approved the variance by a 4-0 vote. If it wasn't for the bank, we wouldn't even be talking about it, noted Zoning Board member Jerry Edwards. The variation also goes to County Board for its consideration on August 14th. Also on page A3, under the heading of Business, we have this article headlined, AHW announces purchase of Gibson City Retailer. AHW LLC announced an agreement on July 23rd to purchase Aarons & Sons in Gibson City. AHW's locations include one in Monticello. All Aarons & Sons employees are being offered employment with AHW, said Mike Miller, corporate sales manager for AHW. The official date of the sale is planned for late August 2019. I would like to thank all our current customers for their loyalty to our business over the past 70 years, said owner Brian Aarons. After three generations of Aarons, it is now time for a new level of growth for Aarons & Sons, he added. With this acquisition, farmers and ag professionals will have more resources, more technology, and more access to parts inventory than ever before. We are poised to serve the Gibson City market with resources and technology to support the customers in new ways, said Miller. AHW is a John Deere dealer dedicated to providing tomorrow's solutions today to our customers, he added. We also want to acknowledge Brian Aarons and his dedicated staff at Aarons & Sons for their service to the community and the ag and turf customers at large for many years, said Miller. Aarons & Sons has served the area since 1947, and they've been great community partners. We want to thank them for their years of service to customers in the local market. We have a commitment to provide excellent customer service as well. We are pleased to serve the Gibson City area and surrounding communities, he concluded. Over the past 6 years, AHW has become one of the strongest and best-resourced John Deere implement dealers in the Midwest. The company has a total of 16 locations serving Illinois and Indiana. And now, turning to page A5, under obituaries, we have the following death notices of local and area interest. Rowena Elson Drennan, 94 of Monticello, beloved mother and grandmother, passed away peacefully in her sleep on July 21, 2019, at the Piatt County Nursing Home, where she has been a resident for the last 11 and a half years. A visitation was held from 5 to 8 p.m. Monday, July 29, 2019, at the Mackie Wright Funeral Home in Monticello. Funeral services were at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, July 30, 2019, at the First Presbyterian Church of Monticello, with Pastor Paul Spangler officiating. A graveside service was held at 2:30 p.m. Tuesday, July 30, 2019, at the Neoga Cemetery in Neoga, Illinois. Werner W. Vern Falk, 82 of Monticello, passed away at 11:10 p.m. July 23, 2019, at the Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello. A visitation was held from 10 to 12 p.m. on Friday, July 26, 2019, at the Christ Lutheran Church of Monticello. Funeral services followed at 12 p.m. Friday, July 26, 2019, at the Christ Lutheran Church of Monticello. Interment was in Monticello Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Carl Hospice, Multiple Sclerosis, Christ Lutheran Church, or the donor's choice. Stephen Lee Goodman, age 84, passed away July 23, 2019, at his home in Burnett, Texas, following a diagnosis of metastasized esophageal cancer on July 5th. Steve was born in Arrowsmith, Illinois, on March 1, 1935. He lived in Weldon, Illinois, and graduated from Deland Weldon High School in 1953. He attended the University of Illinois in Champaign before joining the U.S. Air Force, where he learned his profession of air traffic control, from which he retired in 1989. The funeral for Steve was at Clements Wilcox Funeral Home in Burnett on Friday, July 26th. Greeting the family and viewing of the body was at 10 a.m., followed by the service at 11 a.m. and burial at Lakeland Hills Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to two mission organizations that they have been involved in since the early 1960s. Gwynne Anderson, serving in China, who established Harvest Now Incorporated, and Abraham Matthews, serving in India, who pioneered India Gospel Team Incorporated. And now, returning to the news and views, on page A2, we have this article under the banner of City of Monticello. The Bridge Center Marion Street projects to begin. The City of Monticello City Council approved the budget and award for the pavement rehabilitations of two major road corridors this summer, Bridge/Center Street from Market Street to the corporate limits, and Marion Street between Piatt Street and Market Street. The project does not include the bridge across Interstate 72 or the bridge across the Sangamon River, as these structures are not under city jurisdiction, but under the Illinois Department of Transportation. Construction activity is anticipated to begin August 12th and be completed by early November. Commuters and residents utilizing these areas may expect some delays. And an article right next to that is under the banner of Bryant Cottage, and the headline reads, Cottage is open again. For the first time in 15 months, the Bryant Cottage State Historic Site in Beaumont will once again have regular hours for those wishing to tour the historic home that has important ties to Abraham Lincoln. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources said that starting August 1st, hours of operation will be from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Tuesdays through Saturdays. April Rothenbach, who has been hired as the site's new interpretive coordinator. She will be the first paid employee at the site since the resignation last year of Benjamin Pollard. Amy will be in charge of daily tours, operations, and working on new interpretive programs for the site, said Matthew Middlestate, the site superintendent of the Lincoln Log Cabin in Lerna, of which Bryant Cottage is a satellite site. The Bryant Cottage, located at 146 East Wilson in Beaumont, is an important part of Illinois Lincoln heritage. Constructed in 1856 by Francis E. Bryant, a friend and political ally of Illinois U.S. Senator Stephen A. Douglas, the cottage was the scene of a meeting between Douglas and Abraham Lincoln on July 29, 1858, where they discussed the details of their upcoming series of U.S. Senate campaign debates across the state. The Lincoln-Douglas debates won national acclaim for Lincoln, who was elected President of the United States 2 years later. It is such an important part of the legacy in Illinois, added Middlestadt. His presidency could not have happened without what happened in Piatt County and at Bryant Cottage. The picturesque one-story, four-room wood frame cottage has been restored and is interpreted as an example of middle-class life in the mid-19th century Illinois. The Bryant Cottage State Historical Site is also a part of the Abraham Lincoln National Heritage Area, which covers 43 counties in central Illinois. Our next article is headline Route 105 work to begin. The Illinois Department of Transportation announces that pavement maintenance on Illinois 105 between Beaumont and Monticello will begin Thursday, August 1st. The work will require intermittent lane closures, which are expected to last through the end of August. Motorists can expect delays and should allow extra time for trips through this area to avoid the work area. When feasible, use of alternate routes should be considered. Drivers are urged to pay close attention to changed conditions and signs in the work zone. Obey the posted speed limits, refrain from using mobile devices, and be alert for workers and equipment. For IDOT District 5 updates, follow IDOT on Twitter at IDOT District 5 or view area construction details on IDOT's Traveler Information Map on gettingaroundillinois.com. And finally, we have this article, Movie Night Rescheduled. Mary Poppins Returns will be showing downtown on Saturday, August 3rd. Visitors and residents are invited to the east side of the square to see this new release on the big screen in downtown Monticello. Hartfield Book Company will be providing for a Make It, Take It kite craft, and the Monticello Police Department will be providing concessions with proceeds to benefit the Shop with a Cop program. The movie begins at sunset. In the event of windy or rainy conditions, the movie will be rescheduled. And the Incredibles will be on August 10th for the Incredibles 2. That's August 10th a Saturday sponsored by CIBM Bank. This has been the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, July 31st, 2019. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.